Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Tan Report. I'm your host, Han Trung. 2024, and I have to get used to saying that, is just a few days old. With a new year, it's pretty common for people to start or stop something in their life. You know, a New Year's resolution. It could be going to the gym, making more time for family, or getting a new job. For certain folks, their resolution could be to cut alcohol out of their life. It's a change that can be tough to make when you live in a place like New Orleans.
We live in a culture of drinking. We drink for every reason, you know, possible. We celebrate with alcohol. Mardi Gras is a prime example. Everybody just, you're living off a Popeye's chicken wing and a slice of king cake and a ton of alcohol, you know, for 10 days. And it just gets to the point where, you know, your liver is actually telling you, like, please stop, you know, at any given time. And you never want to stop because you're afraid it's going to end up being like a social death sentence in a way if you quit drinking. I know that's what scared me from stopping.
Meet Maggie Darling.
I am a homicide detective with the New Orleans Police Department. I also teach yoga part-time at a studio nearby on Magazine Street.
That's something you don't hear every day. A homicide detective who's also a yoga instructor.
It is a fun thing to tell people. I'm a homicide detective and I teach yoga part-time. I like to slide that in. It's very wild if you think about it.
The yoga part will make more sense later in the story, but I want to first explain why I reached out to Maggie. You see, 3 years ago, Maggie made a choice to go cold turkey. No more booze in her life. She went on what she calls her sober journey. We'll get into why she made that decision a bit later. I figured if this is a time that some people are contemplating sobriety in their own lives, it may be helpful to hear from someone who is sober, to see what their life is like on the other side of alcohol. The conversation I had with Maggie was honest, at times funny, and also emotional.
Yeah, 1 second.
Take your time.
It's weird how things, you know, hit you. Sometimes you could talk about it and don't get this type of response, and other times, I think it's probably because the sobriety's involved.
Initially, Maggie put herself in something she refers to as a self-imposed timeout with alcohol. 3 years later, she hasn't had a drink. Sobriety has helped her look at her life, and really herself, through a more honest lens. But to understand the person she is now, we need to get a sense of who Maggie was before she became sober, and her relationship with alcohol.
My relationship, I thought, was pretty average because the city is what it is. And average to anyone else outside of New Orleans is...
Yeah, New Orleans is standards of average in terms of being moderate.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a celebration is going to be, sometimes that's probably not on scale with what other towns and cities probably have in the United States.
Come to find out, nowhere near. so we're all alcoholics if you go anywhere else. But, you know, what I thought was normal, it really isn't.
Maggie thought it was normal because she was born and raised in New Orleans, where alcohol is just a part of the landscape. Just visit one of the many drive-through daiquiri shops we got down here in Louisiana. YouTubers have made videos of their experiences.
Howdy, can I get a daiquiri to go?
What kind?
What do you got?
Strawberry, hurricane, pina colada, margarita.
How about hurricane?
What size?
Small. In fact, you can get a daiquiri to go.
While we do have laws restricting open containers for drivers in a vehicle, passengers are free to drink. On the streets of New Orleans, the chances of you getting busted for having a drink while you're walking are pretty slim. And if you're in the French Quarter, it's full speed ahead. This city has an economy built on celebrations, libations, and a mantra of let the good times roll. Maggie understood all of that at a young age.
You're in social clubs, you know, St. Patrick's Day, you know, you're marching, you know, everybody's a part of some crew, you know, or some type of social and pleasure club. And, you know, if you remove alcohol from it, what do you have after that? You know, it's a scary thought.
And that's very specific for here, mm-hmm. because you can, and I'm not going to say you started drinking before you were 21, but I'm going to venture a guess that maybe others around here in the city did.
Yes, yes.
And that was sort of socially accepted. Mm-hmm. But I think, in general, when we're young adults, young teenagers, you know, we start getting the pressures that when we go to parties, like, what do you do at parties? You know, somebody's going to get a keg. Somebody's going to get, you know, whatever it is that you want to enjoy that night. And it starts there. And I guess what I'm hoping that you'll do is, can you kind of talk about what the social pressures that maybe you weren't necessarily aware of when you were young, but just in general, like, how that works or for alcohol, because it seems to me, I grew up around it, it started fairly early, and it's almost expected, like, if you're going to party, you got to have alcohol there.
Absolutely. And look, I'll be completely honest, like, you know, it starts at a very young age. We have hurricane parties here, you know, and you drink with your parents, and there was driveway parties, and there was all kinds of things for me and my childhood, and it was okay if you drank with your parents, and you're introduced to it. It's normal.
Hell yeah, if your parents are saying it's okay, then
yeah,
you
and
got
and
the
they
green
weren't,
light.
They weren't encouraging me to do it all the time, but, like, you know, and honestly, I'll say this, in all fairness, it wasn't encouraged by my parents, but it was one of those things, like, it was never checked, you know, and all the neighborhood kids would get together with the parents.
Right,
and
you weren't going to get grounded for participating in that particular party.
And that's part of the culture, for sure.
Obviously, drinking is not unique to New Orleans. It's very much a part of society in general. If there's an occasion to celebrate, chances are there's going to be alcohol. It's at gas stations, grocery stores, and in our homes. It's so ubiquitous that if you watch some of the marketing of alcohol, you get the sense that beer could actually bring us all together.
They say all people are 6 degrees of separation away from each other. But some are just a six-pack away. The people who share the same spirit share the same beer. This buzz for you.
A lot of commercials for alcohol show images of people dancing, laughing, and being with family or friends. It's been like this for as long as I can remember. And by the time we're of age, it's almost expected that if we could drink, that we should. Maggie felt that in her early years.
I know for me, and most young people, it's in your mind, you're shy. Most people are shy. And as soon as you start drinking, this alter ego comes out and you have a lot more fun, you're more relaxed, and you're more comfortable. And it just becomes, that's where I feel the self-medicating starts, or at least it did for me, you know, at a younger age, to be accepted by people and not to be
that
wallflower. Right, yeah. And I think that's where it really, in general, I mean, with any adult outside of the city, I think that's where it does begin, is the social awkwardness of teenage years, and then it just blows up from there, or could blow up from there.
When Maggie graduated high school, she didn't want to go to college. Instead, she chose to go into law enforcement.
What propelled you to join law enforcement instead of going another path?
Grew up watching Cops.
Bad boys.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, I liked the idea of not being in an office and just kind of being on the move, doing your own thing, and the spontaneity of, you know, I don't know what's about to happen next. We're, you know, I've always been kind of one of those that thrives in chaos. Some of my supervisors will tell you that. It's I think it's a good thing. But
it can be a skill for your job, for sure.
For sure. And, you know, I always thought it was, you know, there's different TV shows, obviously, growing up that, you know, you're like, I want to be the police, and this is pretty cool. It really started materializing in, like, when I was 16. And then the draw was, at that time, you know, you didn't need a diploma. So it was essentially a trade, if you think about it.
So if I can condense your career, you didn't start with NOPD. You started in Jefferson Parish, correct?
I did. I started in Jefferson Parish. I was a cadet for about 2.5 years. And then I went through the Gretna Police Academy because Jefferson Parish didn't have one at that time. Well, they had one, but just they didn't have one going that year. So Sheriff Harry Lee ended up signing off on me to go to an outside agency to go through their academy. And then pretty much right away went on the street at 21. And I was there till about May of 2005. And then I lateraled over to the New Orleans Police Department. And some would say my timing is impeccable because Katrina happens 3 months later, you know.
Girl, you said you thrived in chaos.
I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't. It was, I'm glad, you know, I made the move. I'm glad with my time with the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office. Again, no regrets. But yeah, Katrina, when you're, you know, 24 years old, it's a lot.
Hurricane Katrina was a lot for so many people in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Police and first responders were no exception.
It was tough in the sense that, you know, you lose your home, so there's no break from it. You know, we were living on a cruise ship for like a month or two, or I don't remember. The time period is just, I can't. It seems like it was a long time. It may have been shorter. You know, we lost a lot of our police stations, a lot of our police cars. We had people donating uniforms to us.
In 2005, Maggie may have been a relatively new member of the NOPD, but she formed some very close connections through the shared experience of the storm.
There was a lot of traumas, you know, that we were all going through, but at the same time, like, you know, those are my closest friends now. You know, a lot of people have moved on, but like, the sense of family, you know, at a job, it was unmatched at that time. You know?
And that was just what happened to you and the NOPD, not to mention what you all witnessed and had to work during that time. And that's another layer of processing.
A lot. And obviously you could tell I was dancing around that. But yeah, for sure.
I would say if there was an occupation, if there was a job, that maybe it'd be okay for you guys to drink at the end of the day. It'd be a member of the NOPD, especially during Katrina.
Yeah.
Like, was that part of the process of, you know, tolerating what was happening? Like, was that?
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All part of that scene, because I know it was for some of the people in my industry.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. After work, you know, we would all meet up and go have some drinks and kind of unload whatever. It was a good therapy. Like, it served its purpose, you know, and like anything in excess, it's not good. But, you know, yeah, we used to go to whatever, you know, watering hole and just kind of vent whatever happened that day. And you know, a lot of people had the same experiences, and much like you were saying, like in y'all's industry, it's the same thing. Y'all were covering stories and seeing things that other people weren't seeing, and y'all had to bounce that off of each other and kind of move past.
In 2008, Maggie made detective. In 2011, she began investigating homicides. Career-wise, she was climbing. And America got to see some of that. Maggie and many fellow detectives of the NOPD were featured on The First 48. The unscripted series by A&E took viewers into the first 48 hours of investigations, as detectives like Maggie tried to find leads and suspects. The cameras were also rolling in non-work settings. In a clip on YouTube, they captured Maggie getting more tattoos. They also captured a bit of her wit and personality.
This part sucks. Right now I feel it in my ribs. Get used to it, it's a certain pain. This is fairly tolerable.
Are we done with it, buddy? God. That looks badass though. That is one of the worst spots I've ever had. It feels like a severe sunburn. It's so worth it. There's a little bit of pleasure in it, it's weird.
You're sicko.
I'm sicko, man.
The future seemed bright for Maggie. She eventually met Chris Cambiotti, a fellow member of the force. They planned on building a life together and got engaged. But in October of 2012, Maggie lost Chris.
The process of grief, you know, it comes in waves, right? So, you know, sometimes you can talk about it and it's matter of fact and, you know, and then sometimes it just hits you, you know. Actually, hold up for a second.
Yeah.
He was killed off duty in a car crash while I was at work. I was in a homicide at the time. And the work dynamic, you know, after that is just so odd because, you know, I couldn't escape it with death investigations. It was tough. You know, being in the death business and then dealing with the grief at the same time of, you know, somebody you just lost, as significant as that. And also the dynamic that he was on the job, so every little thing would, you know, remind me.
It was around the holidays when I sat down with Maggie. She said Christmas was always Chris's favorite time of the year, so understandably there were a lot of emotions as she reflected on losing him and how she tried to work through it.
That was definitely a trauma that I tried to go through and process. And even looking back now, I think I processed it the best way I could. I went into therapy after, of course, and pick up tools. But, you know, I was still drinking at the time. And, you know, it's not really the amount that you drink at the time, but the fact that you're still drinking in therapy. You know, looking back, did the therapy really help, you know, or did I really unpack everything, deal with it as best as you can in that type of situation? So that was definitely some stuff when I got sober. Another trauma that I was like, well, I guess I didn't deal with it completely, you know. And that's the thing with drinking is that everybody has traumas to a certain extent. Like that's just life, you know. You're gonna have it. You're not coming out of it, you know, alive. And when you remove the alcohol and truly deal with it, you know, that's the only way you're gonna get past it.
How would you characterize your relationship with alcohol during your career?
My relationship with it through the duration, it was touch and go. You know, sometimes there's more times than others, but where I would drink. Yeah, it becomes a coping mechanism for sure. You know, accumulated sleep issues. Now, where did I get that? Who knows? People can, you know, we could throw that up there and so many things, so many reasons why my sleep is jacked up. I know for me, for drinking, you know, I would drink just to slow down my mind so I could sleep, you know, and it would be after work just to slow it down. But the funny thing, I know I'm jumping ahead, but funny thing about that was when I was educating myself in that year of self-imposed timeout that I did, I learned that I am actually allergic to alcohol. There's an allergy model that I picked up on, and apparently you're not supposed to get energy off of alcohol. And if you do, you're allergic to it. So you can't think of it in the terms of break out, you know, like some people are legitimately like allergic, they break out.
That's me, girl. A lot of Southeast Asians, I don't know what the proper terminology or the science book terminology of it is, but some Southeast Asians are born without an enzyme that processes alcohol.
There you go.
And if I consume enough, and it doesn't take a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I will break out, headaches.
Wow.
I won't say when. There have been times that perhaps somebody has picked me off the floor of a bar because I just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And again, the social pressures were there where I'm at some function that, you know, what's wrong with you? You should be social. You should have a drink in hand. And I've made that mistake several times.
Yeah.
And paid for it.
Yeah.
But obviously, apparently for you, like, it energized you.
Yeah. So, you know, I used to love my Jameson, and it would actually wake me up. Like, I would end a shift or whatever and go meet, you know, some of my friends out after. And, you know, I would love to just go out for two like a normal human. But what I found out was, yeah, you know, sip my first one like a normal individual. The second one, even, you know, sip that, maybe it's a little bit quicker, and just something goes off in my head, and it's just like, I'm wide awake now. And so all kinds of great ideas and things to do after that happen, you know, it's all kinds of fun things, you know, but I was presented with that, like, that's an allergy model for alcohol, is that it's supposed to depress the system, which we know that, right? But there are people like me that it will actually give you energy because it's just unlocking all kinds of feel goods in your head, and you're ready to go. And so it was like a reward. So now
dopamine's a hell of a drug,
oh,
boy.
Oh God, reward is great, you know. And so that's another reason why it's hard to walk away from. Talk about insecurities, you know, as an adult. Lack confidence, you know, not for any particular reason. Maybe it's something that comes from your childhood or, you know, whatever. But I honestly, like a lot of people, I tell people now, like, yeah, I lack confidence, and it blows their mind because I guess I've been faking it until I make it as far as confidence goes. And my brain works a lot faster. It moves quicker. So I feel like, you know, I sound more educated. You
it's,
know?
It's an elixir for a lot of people that, you know, they always called it liquid courage.
Like, absolutely.
You become something a bit more courageous, a bit more braggadocious, social, the whole nine.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what was it like stepping away from that? Like when you weren't drinking, like, who was Maggie Darling then?
Yeah.
Like when
she's
when,
a hoot.
Yeah. When the doors were closed though, when you weren't at the bar, like.
Yeah. Oh, from the time of sobriety when I stepped away, or while I was still in it?
While you were still drinking.
Just low energy, tired all the time, because come to find out the alcohol was not helping you sleep. Not super productive. I mean, and this is not work associated. Like work, I get down and do what I got to do, and it didn't interfere with that. But just, you know, sitting with my own self and everything is just very low energy, not wanting to do a whole lot, really have to push myself to do things. Yeah, I mean, it's the normal, you know, you pretty much described depression. That's what it is.
I was going to ask you, like, emotionally, how did you feel? Like,
it's depression. It's, you know, just sadness for no particular reason, you know. Most Americans have it, you know, and nothing to be ashamed of. And, you know, my drinking habits were not that of like an everyday, you know, thing. You know, there would be times with my schedule where I would go 10 days without drinking, and that was fine, you know. And then, you know, you have a 4-day weekend off or whatever. And, you know, we live in a sports town, so I hear. no, but I mean, I'm, you know, Saints fan. I'm a huge sports fan. I sports. I love sports. You know, so there's always something, you know, going on the weekends. There's some type of sporting event or something going on. And, of course, you drink and, you know, have fun. And then you start it back over again where it's 10 days without, you know, drinking, you know. And that's kind of what I wanted to touch on, like, with alcoholism. A lot of people think it's cut and dry. It's that guy that wakes up or that girl that wakes up in the morning and they need to have a drink to level off, or they need that drink to function, or go do their job, or go do whatever just to, you know, make it that day. But I feel like alcoholism, it's a spectrum. I feel like there's different levels, there's different layers. You know, again, while I was taking time off to learn about me and what makes me tick and why do I do this, and, you know, do I really need this moving forward, I was always under the impression that binge drinking was, because I've had friends that do that, like, where they just, for those 4 days, they're just gone off the rails. They're drinking. But I learned during my time that what I was doing was binge drinking, even if it was just, you know, that day going into the next day, you know. So I think there's just a layer, because, like, my addiction didn't affect work. It didn't affect my work product or anything like that. I could still go do things, and it was more of on a personal level, I wasn't doing too well.
That was the first time you mentioned addiction, and I don't want to mischaracterize how you viewed, you know, your relationship with alcohol. Do you think you had an addiction to alcohol?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I was definitely an alcoholic. And again, it goes back to the spectrum. And I feel confident saying that. I'm very out loud, and I speak on it. I don't
you?
Hide. Yeah, yeah.
Loud?
Yes, yes. I do not hide behind it. I want to normalize it, because it is a thing, and a lot of people have a problem, you know? And I'm definitely not one of those in recovery that would point that out to anyone, you know. I don't even have those discussions unless they, you know, ask me, you know, on the side or whatever. But I'm a live and let live type of person. But if I can normalize it and say, hey, look, I'm an alcoholic, I'm in recovery, maybe it gives hope to somebody else. And if I help that one person, because I'm kind of living out loud with my sobriety, if it helps one person, then it just makes it all worth it for me.
The weird dynamic for me that I see is I feel like society's already normalized it, not to diminish mm-hmm. what you're doing, but I think the commercials we see, mm-hmm. it's normal to be, I don't want to say drunk, but it's encouraged.
Like, yeah.
Here it is. It's legal. Mm-hmm. Have a good time.
Yeah.
It's normalized in that sense, but it's not normalized in talking about the ramifications of it.
For sure. We all joke around. I mean, even... I used to joke around, like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. We all joke around, like, oh, yeah, you know, I did this and this weekend, and we kind of all, you know, laugh about it and have fun, you know, and talk
and
about it.
And here are the pictures.
Yeah.
You were hilarious.
And look, I had some great time, and I could talk about it because I survived it, you know. Like, it's, you know, some people don't get that luxury of surviving their dumb decisions.
By November of 2020, Maggie was a veteran with the NOPD. She had been a detective for 12 years, investigating homicides for 9 of them. Of course, 2020 was the initial year of the COVID-19 pandemic. Almost every aspect of life shifted to the home. For some people, that included drinking.
I think COVID really pushed it to the forefront, everybody drinking at home. And you notice that that's when a lot of, like, social media was, like, pushing a lot of things because they had to make money, these businesses and stuff, and the marketing. And, you know, I know—
Interesting, I didn't think about
COVID is where I find it really, because now there was always a stigma, like, as long as you don't drink at home, you're not an alcoholic, right? I mean, that's how I came up. Like, as long as you're not drinking at home, you're not an alcoholic. You go out and do your business, but, you know, if you're not, you know, drinking at home, you're good. And COVID changed that, because that's
everything
all you
was
could
done
do.
At home. Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're having a Zoom happy hour with your friends on your couch, you know? You know, hand up, that was me. Yes, I did that. And I think that's, you know, because of the alcohol business, they had a market to that. And so that's what really became, that's just my own personal belief. I have no studies to back that up. I'm sure they're out there.
It makes sense, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the marketing for everybody.
Alcohol delivery at home.
Exactly.
That started during COVID.
It was during COVID that Maggie had to make a choice about alcohol.
There was an incident that, you know, I ended up getting a DWI off duty. It was a weekend off. It was after a Saints-Falcons game. And I realized then that enough is enough, you know. And I brought embarrassment to the department, you know, my family. So the self-imposed timeout happened then. And I'm like, well, look, I can always reevaluate. And if I really have a problem, then great, we're solving it. If I don't, just go back to that fun thing called moderation, which doesn't exist if you have been drinking for so long. You know, obviously you don't know moderation. So yeah, that was the incident, and I'm extremely thankful for it. I'm sure it's surprising for some to hear, but having something held over my head and forcing me to make a hard decision and forcing me to do better and be better, that was a blessing.
That moment for you when you, I don't want to say you flipped a switch, but when it became very apparent that you had to make a different choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did you feel on the other side of that Like, were you nervous about it? Were you confident that you're like, this is going to be my life? Like, what was that process like for somebody out there that may be debating, like, maybe I should make a change?
Yeah, I just automatically came to the conclusion, again, self-imposed timeout, whatever that looks like for that person. For me, it was a year. I highly recommend a year. I've had friends since my incident who have come to me and were like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about taking a timeout and just seeing where I'm at on this. I've recommended 3 months, no less than 3 months. 3 months is a good solid number. And during the journey, all I suggest to people is that they're incredibly honest with themselves. You know, I was incredibly honest with myself, which is the most uncomfortable thing to be, is realizing your faults and what makes you tick and what's your triggers and what's, you know.
Because it's very easy to ignore those.
Absolutely. Why would you want to deal with it?
Exactly.
Why would you want to? You know, I tell people, like, that's a part of it. Like, you have to be completely honest with yourself and see where it goes. But, you know, I highly recommend a 3 month, like, detox, a break. It's doable. And you can do it. It's not, but you have to work on yourself during that time period, too. It's not good enough just to remove the alcohol. You need to understand why, the why. Because once you remove alcohol, all the emotions, everything that you were trying to suppress, it's out there. And now you got to learn how to deal with this, you know, and you have a lot of people that will quit drinking and they just remove the alcohol, but they don't work on themselves. And then you just end up going back to, or it makes your sobriety a little bit more difficult.
And it's probably hard to kind of describe this, but how do you think people are viewing you now after you decided to stay sober? Like, did you catch some crap from people? They're like, what are you doing?
So, again, that incident was a blessing because a lot of my friends were like, oh, I know you need to take a time out. You're trying to, you know. So I had the blessing of having something that was, look, y'all can Google it. It made the news, you know. So I was, everybody knew that I had gotten this DWI. So I had it easy. I really did.
It's nobody, weird that you characterize it that way. But
I did.
I see
yeah.
Your point.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people, when they find out you're not drinking, they want to know why. And it's like, well, it's really none of your business, you know? Like, but that's the world we live in. Like, well, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you drinking? You know, or, yeah, I can't trust a guy who doesn't drink, you know? And it's out there. That's the
right,
stigma.
It's never the question. It's like, what's wrong with
you?
You're drinking so much.
Right, right. Also, I don't know if you know this about me. I'm pretty alpha. So it's one of those things where, you know, F off if, you know. And people F off. You know, I've offered people who are taking a break and they still have to go do a bar scene or a social gathering where there's alcohol. And it's always about having something in your hand. So I'll give them little pointers as to, you know, what to do with that. There's so many different mocktail options out there. We live in a world where apparently this newer generation right under us, again, not saying age, right? This newer generation, they're not drinking. But they also have the benefit of edibles and whatever else. So there's a lot of spiritless options out there. There's a lot of bars.
There's a bar in the CBD.
Dreamhouse, yeah. That is an actual sober bar, and have like a little oxygen bar and all kinds of neat stuff. And you can socialize there. One of my favorite places is the bakery bar because you can get all the treats. The food is amazing, and they actually have a spiritless menu. And
well, I saw that you posted on your social media that when you went to Jazz Fest, there was a sober tent.
There was. And that was something that was new to Jazz Fest. And it's the Phoenix, and they're pushing it. And it's just nice to have options, and there's more out there. And
I wish it was for me when I was younger.
Yeah, I think COVID broke people, and a lot of people, I've found out a lot of people have gotten sober around that time period because it was just too much. Another part of my recovery is just finding something that interests you. You know, find new hobbies that don't necessarily call for alcohol. And
was that running for you?
Running was a lost bet. That was a lost bet. And as much as I want to say I hate running, I'm a year in and a half marathon in. Running definitely. That came a lot later in my sobriety. I'm 3 years sober now. November made 3 years. But yoga was my thing. And then getting back into the gym and, you know, the spirit, the mind, the body, it's all connected. And when one's lacking, you know, all fail. Is just my belief. So you have to work on everything. You got to work on your mental health. You got to work on your physical health. You know, I'm truly blessed that I have pretty good health and I'm able-bodied and able to do things. But yeah, finding a hobby, whatever that looks like for you.
I asked Maggie what she thought her fiancé Chris would have thought of her choice to go sober.
Well, damn.
And I may have overstepped a boundary.
No,
apologize,
no. I think he'd be proud. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks a lot. It's rare I get tears, you know, now, but again, I'm an open book. No, I think he'd be proud.
I want to take a moment to give a shout out to the public information officers at the NOPD who cleared this interview. It's pretty rare that we get to learn about such personal and intimate aspects of someone like Maggie. On the news, they're referred to as detectives or authorities. It can sound so clinical sometimes. And to be fair, though, a certain level of detachment or professional distance must be maintained by them because, with the amount of crime and crisis they encounter, it may be the only way they can hold on to their own humanity. As the cliche goes, they're people too. And like many of us, they may turn to alcohol and other so-called vices to cope with this thing called life. For Maggie, there came a time when that could no longer be an option. She's not one to preach about sobriety to anyone, but she knows it's a choice that works for her.
Do you think this will be something permanent for you? I know nothing in life is permanent, but you started this off as a break, and then now it's 3 years.
Yeah. No, it's a permanent thing because I just don't see the benefit. There's no health benefit for me to drink. You know, again, I referenced earlier, I'm in the best shape of my life, and I'm here for longevity. I'll go ahead and say my age, 42, and the 40s are a fun time. It's a great time. I'm really, really...
I vouch for that.
Oh, God, it's great. I really, really enjoy it. I'm sure I would have still enjoyed it to some degree, because the 40s are happening regardless, but I think I'm getting the most out of it, for sure. You know, getting a lot of traveling in, taking the time off. You know, I've been in this career for, you know, 24 years. I'm established. I'm rooted where I'm at, or, you know, hopefully I am. But I'm at that point where I don't have to prove anything to anyone. I just have to just do my job and take time off. I highly recommend taking time off, setting boundaries. That was another thing in sobriety, just setting boundaries with personal and work relationships. And
it sounds like you're the most honest version of yourself now, then.
I am. And I'm honest with myself, which that's tough. And it's hard to be honest with people if you can't be honest with yourself. You screwed up, or yeah, you have a problem. Okay. You can come back from this. A lot of people live in the shadows, not wanting to admit that they're a problem because it's a sign of weakness. And honestly, it's a sign of strength when you recognize you have a problem and you need to address it.
In New Orleans, I'm Tan Trung for WWL Radio.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.